Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
So this morning I want to talk about the ox herding pictures. In particular, I want to talk about the last one of that series of 10. So just in case you haven't been introduced, I'll give you the quick summary of these. These might smell like beer a little bit. The last time they were used was a bar in Berlin on Monday night. First Dharma talk I've given in a bar. It was really fun. But this is a story. The 10 ox herding pictures are a story. It comes from China, around 1100. A story about practice. It's about the trajectory of our practice. It's about this little boy who's lost his ox and looking all over. The ox represents our true nature, our Buddha nature. So he's... These pictures are from the 20th century, but they're my favorite ones. There he's lost. He's lost his ox, and there he finds the footprints. And there's verses that go with each one of these from 11th to 12th century monk Kakuan. And there he just catches a glimpse and he's very happy. But then it's not over. He has to kind of do his best to tame this ox. And he does. The ox pulls him over hill and vale, and then they get friendlier, and then this is my favorite one here, riding the ox with playing a tune, and then the ox disappears after that. The ox, which was really just a metaphor anyway, is gone. He's there at home, and he's got more work to do. He has some deep work to do. And this last one, returning to the source. This is the knife. And so he really, in the eighth one, he disappears completely and then returns to the source and is born. And in this one, mountains are mountains, rivers are rivers. Again, after this, the middle stretch of mountains are not mountains, rivers are not rivers. And then the last one. Sometimes this one's called returning to the marketplace with bliss bestowing hands. And by the way, our little boy is this one. It's the old guy there. And the verse that goes along with that one is, barefooted and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. My clothes are ragged and dust laden, and I am ever blissful. I use no magic to extend my life. Now before me, dead trees become alive. So this is his return back into the busyness of life. It says bare-breasted, and he mixes with everybody. He's been through a lot, this little boy. He's been through the whole journey of practice, and now he's just a regular Joe. Again, I should say here, maybe I might say it at the end too, but it would be. This is about our practice. This is a kind of the cycle of our practice through our life. But it's also, I believe, it's also the cycle of a retreat. It's also the cycle of every time we come to the Zen Center and go back out. It's that same cycle. So this is, I think, in a kind of has a macro cycle and plenty of micro cycles as well. So he comes out into the marketplace and he's not putting on he's not trying to be anybody. He's not putting on airs. He's not putting on a cool face. He's just jolly. And in the second, there's two verses in this. I didn't read the second one. Second one, he's getting wine from the wine shop and carrying it home. And he meets and greets everybody he sees. And this, I want to emphasize that this is part of our practice. This part of meeting everyone, whether tall or short, or black or white, or happy or sad, or annoying or simpatico. It's part of our practice to mingle with the whole world. And I think it's up to us as individuals to work on that practice, and as a Sangha to embody that practice and work on it as well. It's an inclusive vision that this last picture shows, and also that Zen aspires to. When I lived in Mount Baldy Zen Center, the rule was very clear, and the Roshi made it clear. If you could follow the rules there, you could stay. Didn't matter what your past was. We weren't checking your criminal record. If you had some karma back there, as long as you could follow the rules here, you could stay. We had one person who tested those rules. He was a scion of the Gambino crime family, or at least that's according to him. Mm-hmm. And he was given to talking about his exploits, and even at one point there was a rumor that he'd apparently started that he had a revolver in his luggage, but he did the whole training period, and he really was earnest about this practice and serious about it, even though he got in a couple scuffles. I had to get in between one of them. And one, right after the training period was finished, he hopped in our truck, took the keys. I don't know how he got in the office, but took the keys, hopped in the truck, went down the hill by himself in the middle of the night, and got completely wasted. And then drove it back up the hill, weaving around, I guess. This is a little... Could have killed himself. He didn't. He rolled the truck. And then came. We had to tow it back up. I was livid. I was a shoji at the time. Didn't have much compassion. But the Roshi, I couldn't believe that I was so mad at him too. He just laughed. He thought that was so funny. And I told him how much the bill was going to, it was going to cost a lot of money and this, that, and the other. Until he found out that this gentleman had taken $40 from a roommate on his way just before he'd gone down. And that was the line. Then it got serious to steal from somebody in the cabin. In the end, we had almost a little trial. It was a very interesting time. Turns out he was wanted in New York, so he had to go back there and take care of it, and then before he could come back, take care of that. Never did see him again, which was kind of unfortunate. I mean, so that is all to say that that's the spirit, you know, is to take people regardless of what they've done in the past, as long as they can do this practice. It's very important that this practice be open to everybody. I think we have to work on that. And I can't believe I left it downstairs. I'm not going to go get it now. But there's a nice little quote from Dogen about, remember, those of you who were here for the retreat in the spring, Hosen and I talked about the instructions to the Tenzo, to the cook. And Dogen's very clear there in a few passages, actually. Don't take wild grasses and lowly ingredients for granted. Make a Buddha palace out of them. Don't just rely or lean on the creamy ingredients. But use, approach all ingredients, whether high or low, with the same sincerity. That line really stuck with me. To approach every body, every thing, whether it's high or low, with the same sincerity. That, I think, is Zen practice. Dogen says, I don't have the line right in front of me, but Dogen says, if you were to do differently, it would be like changing your demeanor depending on the status of the person you met. And that's not the Zen way, he says. So that's part of our practice too, is to notice the way we meet people. I would suggest also the way we meet situations as well, with the same sincerity. And you know, I notice myself changing my way of being, dependent on whether, you know, somebody's in the out group or the in group, whether they're part of my tribe or somebody else's tribe. That's something to notice, I think. You know, we have a lot of tribalism right now in our headlines. In-group, out-group, best group, don't want to touch group. And I think that tribalism has existed all the way, you know, throughout history, needless to say. And I guess actually it was probably worse 100 years ago than it is now, probably even 50 years ago. In some ways, from my point of view anyway, as walls start to come down, that's bound to be hard for some. And it was kind of a kickback. But for me, I wonder what the trajectory of our own lives is. Are you better at it than you were 5 years ago? Approaching people who are outside your tribe than 10 years ago. I think it's part of our practice to do that. To take a risk and give a kind of equal sincerity to the variety of people in our lives. I believe that this core practice of ours that we've done all morning now, some of us, does help with that. It helps by zeroing us out and giving us a fresh start. with the world, with others, it temporarily takes down all of the boundaries. And I think it can teach us something about the boundaries that we create, the lines we draw in our lives. And, you know, one of the reasons that I feel it's important at this, that I feel good about at this center, having people from other faiths come, like we just did while I was gone, having people from different perspectives, not just the Zen perspective, not just the right perspective, is so that we can see, we can demonstrate to ourselves that this wisdom is not... registered to us alone. We don't have a trademark on it or a monopoly. Zen Master Ikkyu was a great example. I'm going to talk about him in October at the 3-day retreat we'd have down at Camp Cell. So fun and fantastic poetry from my point of view from him. And he kind of embodied not changing your view based on a person's status or the way you act. He's got this story that I told the kids just a couple months ago, where he was an artist, you know, and didn't live in particularly great circumstances, but he was well known. He had a lot of wealthy patrons, and for his art mostly. And he was invited to a dinner by some of those patrons, by a patron, and he sauntered up there in his beggar's robes that he wore most of the time, and knocked on the door and. Whoever answered the door said, didn't recognize him and just shoot him away. And so he went home and changed and got his really nice fancy robe on. He came back to the dinner and they welcomed him. Come on in. And he took his seat and got to his offer. And then started taking off his robe and folded it up and put it on his safu and said, here you go, here's the robe. Apparently this is what you invited to dinner. And then he left. So this last picture is someone who mixes with all different sorts of folks, without pretension, and he's also a bodhisattva. I think this is the picture of the bodhisattva, the one who does a lot of practice and then returns to the world. Who's seen that empty circle, seen the world of peace and tranquility, and turned back from that. He didn't hang out in that nice picture with the rivers and the trees, but came back into the world to mix it up. And the bodhisattva ideal explicitly rejects the idea of staying in that world of bliss and kind of segregating yourself there where it's comfortable. It's anti-utopian. So if you're going to do this practice, you have to commit to living and breathing in the world of greed and hatred and ignorance. It's also said sometimes that this fellow, you notice his big belly. Oh, he also has a sack on his back. That's not obvious, but he has a sack on his back. And it's sometimes talked about as Hote. Hote is this laughing Buddha you've seen in gift shops around the world. with a sack on his back sometimes and a big belly. And looking very relaxed and happy. He famously kind of gives things to children and enjoys himself. There's one story about Hote, which I didn't know until I started researching this one. I hadn't heard it. Maybe you had, Wes. I don't know. But he would go around giving candy to children and selling it for a penny to lay people and to monks. One day a monk walks up to him and says, "What's the meaning of Zen?" And Hote drops his bag. And then the monk asks, "How does one realize Zen?" And Hote picks up his bag and continues on his way. That's the kind of rhythm of practice, to drop everything, to drop our bag, and then to pick it up again and go move right into our life without hesitation, as Hote does. The last line is, "Now before me, the dead trees become alive." And I think what that means, and what the Bodhisattva does, and what Hote very kind of famously does, is to brighten the world, to enliven the world with your presence, even if it's just a little bit. So to know bliss, to know kind of the world of the eternal, and to come back to the world of suffering and brighten it. I tend to talk about the Bodhisattva as coming back to help others, and I think that is part of our job as in this work that we do, to come back and compassionately help others. And to be sure, actually, in this picture also, he's handing this little boy or little young person something, which, and that little young person looks suspiciously like the person in the other ones. So there he is, exactly. That's the cycle. He's helping, that he's giving that person, that young person, something for their journey, their own journey. He's helping out in that way. But I think also, you know, there are two kinds of love in Buddhism from old. There's compassion and care, karuna, and there's also loving kindness and friendliness. Care, which is to sort of take care of people who are suffering. And then there's just the joyfulness of life, loving kindness and friendliness, the Maitreya. And I think Hote really exemplifies that part. And I think that this practice can give us a little bit of that. A little bit of something that is hard to quantify, but something that you can feel after a long sit like this morning, after a retreat. A lighter touch going back into the world, a more active and generous spirit. And I think it helps, that helps us approach life differently, approach the problems in our life differently. But it also helps in some small way enlighten the world.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.